You guys are seeing silver supply issues on the front lines. We still have this tightness in China, but we continue to see silver come out of the COMEX. And backing all of that industrial demand in China, we're down to 21.3 million ounces. That's it. Might have something to do with the $10 spread.
And I look at the disruptions in Mexico, and we're running deficits for the last 7 years.
Well, hello there, my friends. Chris Marcus here with you for Arcadia Economics on Thursday, April 2nd, where today we are going to be digging into a lot of issues silver related, certainly the supply, some of the flows of metals, as well as how things are looking in the silver equities space, where even though the price is well off the highs, still quite a healthy margin for the silver miners as well as the gold miners. So fortunately enough, joined by two silver mining executives who are seeing this from the front lines and had plenty to discuss, as you heard in our brief intro. Although real quick, just wanted to show you a quick look at the pricing. Our interview was recorded yesterday. Although as of Thursday afternoon, we see the gold futures down 128 to 46.84. Silver futures down $3.50 to 72.58. Obviously, the big news last night was Trump's speech where he threatened to blow Iran back to the Stone Age. And you can see the West Texas crude oil up 11%. Seeing crude over Brent, which is a bit unusual today. And a quick look at our silver spread, we can see that here we have 72.44 in the COMEX, 81.17 in Shanghai. And just because we talked about a few things in the interview before we got to the part about the silver flow, so I just wanted to get that to you first, because here you can see the chart of the COMEX, and that steady drain just continues, has not really slowed at all, 1 to 3 million ounces coming out a day. Again, if you look back historically, still a lot more silver in here than just about any other point in time, except for this spike back in 2021. Yet again, what is really stunning is that when you see how little silver is in the Shanghai inventories, which is backing the industrial market, there they're down to 21.3 million ounces. We do talk about that further as we dig into that a little bit later in the interview. Also, you can see this blue line represents the silver that has come out of the ETF. So even when you had silver just breaking through 80 on its way up to 121, that's when we saw silver begin to leave the ETFs. It doesn't seem like there's a huge surplus out there anywhere, evidenced by the fact that that spread in Shanghai remains. And I think that's perhaps more valuable than anyone's personal opinion on it. Those are the prices the market's paying. And this is at a time where we're seeing silver leave the COMEX and silver leaving the ETFs, yet still the Shanghai inventories continue to go down, which I think speaks to the demand there. Then, just to go for two, here is the London inventories, and here you can see back in October where they ran into trouble and metal came back from New York and China, which has caused the tight conditions in China. And now, even over the last 2 months, we're starting to see metal come out of London again. Then add in that we'll also see the latest Silver Institute numbers, I believe April 14th or 15th. I believe, as you can see from the update they put out in November, they're expecting a smaller deficit. Yet a lot of metal on the move, which is affecting a lot of things, especially in the midst of the conditions around the war. So I think you'll find today's conversation helpful, especially if you are a mining stock investor. Got a lot of great insight from both Sean and Rick on that one. And with that said, let us take it over to the conversation with Sean Kunkun and Rick Van Nieuwenhuis of Contango Silver and Gold. Today, we're going to be digging into some of the rather intriguing silver flows that have been taking place behind the scenes, even as we've seen the silver price go from as high as $121 back in January. It's almost like feels like a dream now, because it was up there and then it fell very sharply, got as low as $61.20. So really pretty much a 50% off sale. Although what is quite intriguing is that when you look at some of the underlying dynamics, of which we have evidence and numbers and charts and stuff to go through today supporting that, a different picture painted than perhaps just looking at the price alone. And fortunately, joined by Rick Van Nieuwenhuis and Sean Kunkun of the new company, Contango Silver and Gold. And great time to have both of you on here. A, congratulations on your deal. And of course, B, that you guys are seeing silver supply issues on the front line. So a lot to dig into at a somewhat turbulent time in the world. But gentlemen, great to have you on in here. Rick, first of all, how are you today, my friend?
Good, Chris. Good to see you again. Yeah, it's turbulent times is probably an understatement of the year, but yeah, good to be on the show again.
Yeah, well, in a minute I'll pull up what is the latest Lucy pulling the football headline. Iran war is on, it's off. Certainly a bit to digest, although Sean, in addition to the former CEO of Dolly Varden Silver, which is now part of Contango Silver and Gold, you've also had some impressive silver forecasts in the past couple of years. You were talking about the triple digit silver, which certainly we did see. And it's great to have you on in here as well today. How are you, Sean?
I'm doing really well. You've got to apologize to the audience, though. I've been so focused on Contango Silver and Gold and the assets and the valuation that I haven't been following the silver news and I haven't been digging into silver as much as I normally am. And the only thing I can comment on for both gold and silver, what's really interesting, Chris, is both metals, they had spectacular 2025s, epic years, some of the best we've seen ever. I think we've got some healthy pullbacks. We went down and almost right to the 200-day moving average for both metals. In the case of gold, 4,100. In the case of silver, about $58. And where we are today is we're right in and around the 75-day moving average for both metals. So for gold, that's 4,750. For silver, that's $75. What I suspect, and I think again, don't throw th things at me, silver audience, but I bet you we might see a little bit of resistance when we get up to the 50-day moving average, which is 49.50 for gold and $84 for silver. And that's healthy and that's normal as we complete the consolidation. The good news is for us miners, our budgets are much lower. Rick can confirm this, but Rick, what are we using for our gold price assumption this year at Contango?
Yeah, we're using a nice conservative $3,700 an ounce for gold, and so that's any every $100 over that is a lot more cash flow to the bottom line. So we're probably going to generate well over $60 million of free cash flow this year. So it's it's and that's at 3,700. So it's it's good to be conservative. We don't need to raise money, so we're we have the luxury of the silver market and the consequent downdrift on the equities. Although we don't like seeing our share price lower, it's a great buying opportunity for investors and new investors in the space. And that's exactly what Sean and I want to do, is get a lot of marketing done, tell the story, and tell shareholders why they need to be paying attention to Contango Silver and Gold. It's good timing.
Chris, you were one of the first people that had me on your channel when I took over Dolly Varden. You believed in me back in 2020 when I first came in. I remember those days around March and April of 2020.
I do. I do. Some volatile times back then. And if I may, I don't want to cut into where you're going here, but just similar to how we saw silver go down to 12 bucks and then accelerate higher, I am of the school of thought that we're in the midst of something like that. But continue, please.
Well, what I told you back then was my goal was to make Dolly, a top 10 silver equity, right? That was the goal. And I'm sitting before you today with my new partner, and Dolly has merged into a company that is now called Contango Silver and Gold. And while we have cash flow, we have $100 million of cash in the treasury. We've got a lot of gold in Alaska, but what I want to say to the silver audience is I'm going to make true on that promise. We're putting out a new mineral resource estimate. It's scheduled for in and around June. And I think what we'll see there is we'll see an adding to that existing high grade primary safe jurisdiction silver inventory. So we're going to give our investors exposure to more silver than that's currently on our books. And I think that will be reflected in the share price. And I think the big opportunity right now is we merged a high-grade safe jurisdiction gold producer in Contango with a primary silver and gold explorer in British Columbia. And when you do a merger, Chris, and you know this from your Wall Street days, the merging companies underperform their peers because there's risk. You go from a proposed merger to a completed merger. There's no guarantee the deal's going to happen. So there's some risk, and there's some shareholders on either side that, even though both companies had 99% voting in favor of the deal, there are a few handful of fringe shareholders that may not be in favor of it. So we've in this correction that's seen most companies down 30%, we were down 40 plus percent. And I think the opportunity now is our goal is to make Contango a household name amongst precious metals investors. It's going to be a go-to name. It's an emerging high-grade mid-tier producer, North American focused. And so, in addition to cash flow, in addition to resource growth, we've got a wonderful development pipeline, and I look forward to getting on here regularly with you, Chris, and sharing the developments, the new discoveries, the production numbers, and no, just really, really excited. So, I'm putting my money where my mouth is. I've been adding to my position significantly and materially, and I'm doing that for the long run.
Yeah, Sean, I know what you mean, and it's interesting. We've talked before about whether we would see consolidation in the industry, certainly with a rather volatile price. You're one example of that. Rick, you also mentioned it was interesting in there how estimate was based off of, I believe, you said, did you say $3,700 gold price assumption?
Yep, that's our budgeting number for planning the year. With our production from Manh Choh, and then the exploration work that we plan to do obviously is very substantial this year with the basically four programs exploring in four different districts. Manh Choh, of course, we're doing work, but at Lucky Shot, at Johnson Tract, and at Kitsault, we'll have pretty significant programs. A total of about 60,000 meters of drilling is planned for the summer, so it's a busy year for sure. Lots of catalysts.
Yeah, and I might mention that gold price assumption with even despite the sell-off, here we are at $4,800 gold. And it was interesting because Goldman Sachs put out a report. They're still expecting 5,400 by the end of the year. And Rick, it was interesting you mentioned a 3,700 because here Goldman, they even are putting their floor at 3,800. So I think it's a conservative estimate, and I think it also points out something that I know is on people's minds. All of the mining stocks got hit pretty hard over the past month, but Sean, as you were pointing out, at these levels, $75 silver, I get it, it's lower than 121, but at $75 silver, $4,800 gold, the mining companies are making a lot of money. Perhaps you can put that in context because, it's all right. Once you've seen 121 breaking 50, you're like, oh, well, if you're only at 55. Whereas a year ago, if you'd said $55 silver or even $4,000 gold, would have been like, wow, we're about to see some fireworks. So
So,
perhaps
Chris,
you could both comment,
yeah,
Sean. Go ahead first.
I'll just jump in here. So, if you take $75 silver and you look at
Yes.
the average silver producer's AISC at $25, you're making $50 on every ounce. You multiply that by 1 million ounces, that's $50 million of free cash flow, right? Now, what we're looking to build here is a company that's producing 5 million ounces a year from the Kitsault Valley, okay? In addition to that, we're looking to complement that with 200,000 ounces of gold production. At the Manh Choh mine right now, we're producing 60,000 ounces a year through the life of mine. I think next year is going to be 80,000 ounces. We're going to be bringing Lucky Shot on, but we've got a plan and a path to 200,000 ounces of gold production and 5 million ounces of silver. So if you look at the average in the industry, 1 million ounces of silver equals $50 million of free cash flow. Those are sort of the numbers to work with. And again, as we budget $3,700 gold, a lot of the silver cos are budgeting $55 silver right now. So there's, you know, it's a very, very, it's very profitable to be a miner right now.
And so just to add on, if you look at it from the gold perspective, and we can talk about the average production of from Manh Choh is 60,000 ounces. We've already put our guidance out. We're a little lower this year. We're going to be a little higher next year. We're doing a bunch of pre-strip now, which will cause for lower lower production, but maybe get the benefit of that next year with that 75 to 80,000. But at that level, and if you use, we're doing all of our calculations still at 3,700 in terms of our project cash flows and all the sustaining costs. But you add another $1,000 because now we're 4,700 plus. You know, that's another $60 million of cash. So, of cash flow for that year. So it's not insignificant. And you know, I always like to point out, you know, for a company that is in production now, generating cash, and we only have 33 million shares outstanding. Yeah. Actually, it's less than 33, but you know, I'm including the pre-funded warrants and the convertible share. So that's, you know, that's a astonishingly low share count. So, you know, that's a company that's got torque as well, because you know, we've got a lot of insider ownership. We've got some big chunky shareholders and institutional shareholders like Alyeska and Franklin, Eric Sprott. So this is just a really well-positioned company.
Yeah, and certainly that's one of the nice advantages of having all that taken care of in advance of conditions like this, where here's the other thing I'd love to get your opinion on, because we're sitting here today, silver has rebounded off about $15, $14 to be precise, off of the lows at $61.20. Yet, despite the fact that the price has gotten clobbered since the Iran war broke out, I don't think anything's changed that silver was just added as a strategic critical mineral. We still have this tightness in China. Here are the Shanghai futures at just under $85, while in New York we're at $75. Meanwhile, I don't know that I would call this a run on the COMEX yet, but we continue to see silver come out of the COMEX. I'm presuming some of that to fill the demand in China, where it's amazing. The LBMA ran into an issue in October that started this whole catastrophe when their free float got under 140 million ounces. And here's backing all of that industrial demand in China. We're down to 21.3 million ounces. That's it. Might have something to do with the $10 spread. So I'm curious, you guys are seeing this on the front lines. We hear of solar panel companies offering premiums. What would you say on the silver side for people who are wondering, gee, after all the fireworks of these past 6 months, what to make of that? Sean?
Well, I was going to ask you a question, Chris.
Yes, sir.
You know, how many ounces of silver go into a Tomahawk missile?
Well, I will say in all fairness, I know that the 500 is the number that's passed around. I'm not sure that that's accurate, but I know that that's what is suggested. I've heard some people dispute that. So my short answer is I don't know, but continue, please.
Well, no, I was looking. There's been over 850 Tomahawk cruise missiles fired as of April 1st, like just in the last 4 weeks alone. Yeah. And you know, I don't know. For me, the reason I got so bullish on silver was, you know, compared to 100 years ago, industry is, you know, using, you know, half of what we're producing, and we're running deficits for the last 7 years. So I just think that we're in this moment with silver where, like, you know, we had the snap, we had the $20 move to $120, and now we're digesting that move, but industry just keeps consuming and consuming and consuming. And you know, I look at the disruptions in Mexico, and so, you know, again, I look at what we have in British Columbia, with primary silver, high grade, safe jurisdiction, And I think we're in a situation right now, Chris, where there's going to be a big premium that comes on to companies like Contango for the location of the project.
Yeah, and Sean, it's a great point you mentioned, especially what you touched on, the war there. We're seeing a change in how war is conducted, with Iran using a lot of drones and AI technology, and not even to mention the different facilities that have been blown up. But Rick, anything that you would add in terms of just the things we've been seeing on the silver side lately?
Yeah, I mean, I just had there's obviously the war has caused a huge disruption, and it's not like the COVID supply chain disruption. It's a disruption of fundamental. You can't It's not about moving the assets around. It's about you don't have access to the assets anymore, and it's not just oil and gas. It's fertilizer that feeds people. It's helium that you need for AI. So there's a huge amount of disruption going on. So that no surprise that the Chinese are paying $10 premium to get the silver that they need to to do what they want to do with it. So whatever all those reasons are, it's not just solar panels, I'm sure. It's other things as well. So yeah, this is a big, huge disruption, and obviously it's going to be inflationary. That's going to trickle. Yeah, if the war is over tomorrow, it's still going to be an effect, a longer term effect on them, because you just don't bring things back right away. Yeah, you get the oil flowing, but and if we start blowing up infrastructure, then that's another whole level of this long term disruption.
And I just want to add one thing, Chris. I think about like recency bias, and COVID's fresh on all of our minds. It wasn't that long ago where we as a globe were stockpiling goods and whatnot. And I think you're going to see stockpiling at mass levels in a whole handful of commodities, including silver. And so even if the war ended tomorrow, I think it's so fresh in our minds that investors are going to turn to hoarding, and that's going to cause a lot of pressure on prices.
Yeah, not to mention, I guess it feels like a while ago, but right after Sean, you and I talked about David Copley and the hundreds of billions they were planning to put into the securing critical minerals. I don't know if J.D. Vance's trade zones he was talking about with international partners, where that stands after, seems like things have changed yet. A lot of things haven't gone away, and although, gentlemen, I'll take everything you said and re-raise just one level higher, because on top of it, if I can get my screen share to pull up, we just saw the copper production hit a as we have this able to see that now, Chile copper output at 9-year low. Obviously, the majority of the silver coming as a byproduct, primarily copper is one of the big chunks. So when you extrapolate this out 5 years, I think, yeah, we're seeing some volatility right now, but it certainly seems like quite a positive environment that you guys are bringing forward, the assets that you're bringing forward, especially even at $75 silver right now.
Yeah, I mean, and the copper issue that you're pointing out is 100% grade related, and these are old tired mines that need big laybacks. They need big capital infusion to continue to mine lower and lower grades, and the only way you produce more metal to compensate for that is a mill expansion, and that's again that's just more and more money. Chile has water issues, and so if you need more water, there isn't more water to get, so you've got to get it out of the ocean, you got to build a pipeline, you got to build a desal plant. So these are not short-term fixes. These are long-term capital intensive fixes. And they're not going away anytime soon. So and Chile's the they're the big copper producer. In fact, you can also look over in the Congo, and the assets there at Ivanhoe, they're having issues. They have the seismic issue, and then Now they put the thing back online, but their mine plan is lower than it was before the seismic issues. So these are big, complicated projects, and they're capital intensive. Some of them are, easy places, like Chile's a fairly easy place to work, but Congo not so much. That's where those are all reasons why we like our assets. They're high grade. They're not sensitive. We're not grade sensitive. We're not cutoff grade sensitive. And they're in safe jurisdictions. So these are, that's why we put the portfolio that we have together, and we're, excited to move it towards production over the next 4 or 5 years, achieve that 100,000 ounces of gold production and 5 million ounces of silver. We think that's a very doable goal, and we're exploring in four districts, so we know we're going to find more gold and more silver in these four districts.
Yeah, well, I think it's certainly an exciting time to be doing that. And perhaps one more, we'll say, general question before I have a few questions to dig into on the new combined entity. But remember back, let's call it, when silver was getting around $100? I think it was Rick Rule, Tavi Costa, a few other private friends that I talked with. They were saying that they felt the mining shares at 100 were cheaper relative to bullion than when bullion was at 50. That just with the level of increase that the mining shares were undervalued. Obviously, we've had a lot of fluctuation, but just the mining sector as a whole, do you guys, and again, not legal financial advice, everybody's situation is different, but just from a perspective of two experienced mining executives and investors, what would you say about the current, what you're seeing in the current levels of equities versus the bullion pricing right now? Rick, you want to go first on that one?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think there's still a big dislocation, and it's across the board, from the Newmont Agnico Eagle level down to our level as a an upstart junior producer. And obviously, the Agnico Eagles and the Newmonts, they're still not valued anywhere close to the amount of cash flow that they're generating. On a relative basis, say, other businesses. And it's only gets worse, it only gets more dramatic as you move down the food chain to a company that like us that's producing 60,000 ounces of gold. We're just no we're valued at less than 2 times next year's cash flow. And if you project out, it's even worse because we're going to generate more cash flow in 2027, and then more again in 2028. So, there's a big dislocation going on here.
Okay, that is what it seems to me as well. But Sean, what would you say to that one?
Well, this is something that I haven't looked at for a long time, but back during the last cycle, I used to look at the HUI, the Huey Index, and there was a relationship between the index and the price of gold. Historically, the index would be half of the price of gold. So, right now, looking at the Huey Index at 812, I would think we're in a $1,600 gold price environment, not a $4,700 gold price environment. So there's a disconnect there, right? And I think in when I look at when I look at the mining equities, and I up until call it January of this year, they were trading on gold prices from the summer, right? They were trading on the quarters that were being reported in Q2. And so I think we've seen a bit of catch up. I think the big companies like some of the big producers are now trading at 10 times earnings. But in previous bull markets, it's not uncommon for them to trade 20 times and then to start factoring in some of their mineral inventory. And some of these companies have done a great job. I think Newmont's got a century of mine life ahead of them in terms of number of ounces, 100 million ounces in the ground amongst their portfolio. So the companies And we're no different ourselves. We've got a great pipeline. It's an incredible pipeline, and we're trading at 2x next year's cash flow. So I do think it's very, there's a reason we're buyers and we're big owners. We see the value here, and we've been through these cycles before. That, I don't know, I think that should give your viewer, just follow what the executives are doing here. We're adding.
Well, certainly always an important indication, and I appreciate that. And Rick, I know you talked last time about the synergies between the two companies, and as I pull up the website, perhaps you could just give people, especially if anyone is new to the new enterprise or, a refresher, but an overview of the combination of the assets that you guys have now and the plan going forward.
Sure. So, our flagship gold producing mine is the Manh Choh mine. It's the one over towards in Alaska. It's on the Yukon, near the Yukon border. It's a direct shipping ore model. So we mine the ore at the mine site, and we put in the trucks, and we transport it up to the Fort Knox mill and located just outside of Fairbanks to process. And that allowed us to get into production very quickly and for relatively low capital. Our share of the capital, we own 30% of the project. Our share of capital was roughly $65 million. Whereas if we had built our own mill and all and tried to do it ourselves, the capital would have been, $500 to $600 million, and it would have taken years and years and years to permit a mine, sorry, a tailings facility. So that's the cash flow generating machine. It's and affected. It's managed by Kinross, so we're effectively a royalty company in reality. Now we're advancing our Lucky Shot project. We've got about a $20 million program going on there, with the objective of getting that into production in 2028, and that'll produce about 50,000 ounces of gold. And we're projecting about a $2,000 all-in sustaining cost. So at today's gold price, that's going to produce over $100 million of free cash flow. So it's a nice little mine, but it's something we can get into production relatively quick. $20 million program there this year. Our Johnson Tract project, bigger scale, much bigger scale operation. But we are essentially, most of the activities there this year are permitting related. We're going to build a road up to the portal site. It's basically 2 years behind Lucky Shot. We already have all the underground workings in place at Lucky Shot, and we have to build that at Johnson Tract. And then and that'll take basically another 2 years after we get the tunnel in. We'll be at the same place we are with Lucky Shot and get a feasibility study done and get a mine plan put together. That's more of a 2030 time frame in terms of production. Kitsault is, and this is where the real synergies are. They're both polymetallic. Johnson Tract is gold rich with copper, lead, and zinc, and Kitsault is silver rich with some gold and then also the copper, lead, and zinc. So they're going to go through the same type of processing, and that's where we really see the synergies. And of course, Kitsault is silver rich. There's some gold there as well. When we put those two together, you're producing over 100,000 ounces of gold and 5 million ounces of silver, and you have a long mine life because you've got lots of resources there to back those up. And then they're both great exploration districts, so we know we're going to find more. The old adage in the mining business, the best place to look for ore is next to the headframe. So
Right.
we're going to be successful with finding more ore there. We've got a 40,000-meter drill program planned for Kitsault this year. I think Sean mentioned earlier we're going to have the mineral resource estimate done by June, by the end of June. That study will then dictate where we do the 43 40 thousand ounces of drilling. It'll be part of it will be infill, part of it will be continued expansion of the high grade zones, and but we're also going to probably do 5,000 to 10,000 meters of drilling on new exploration, grassroots exploration, new targets. It's a 20 km long string of pearls, and the north end's pretty. There's some drilling on the north end at Homestake, and there's drilling on the south end at Dolly Varden and Torbrit, but there's not a lot of drilling in between. So we got a lot of ground to cover there.
Okay, so it sounds like we'll also have some drill results to look forward to. And Sean, when you look, let's say you look a couple of years ahead, what do you imagine long term will be the percentage of gold versus silver?
The percentage of gold versus silver. I don't think I have to look that far out to see somewhere between, it's a good question. I think where we're going, where we are right now is, we've got about 2 million ounces of gold and about 65 million ounces of silver. I don't think it would be a stretch for us to go to 100 million ounces of silver and have the 2 million ounces of gold. So I was just going to, say 30 to 50 times is, I think, kind of where I see things progressing. But yeah, that's how I see it. And I
Okay.
think, we've seen the ratio. When we first met, the ratio was 125 to 1. I think it's 60, 62, 63 to 1 right now. So that silver is becoming more and more valuable on a relative basis.
Yeah, and certainly will be fascinating. One can only imagine what we'll see in the next couple of years. And Rick, perhaps last question, just in terms of the timeline, anything that you want people to be aware of that's coming out in the next couple of months that they should keep on the calendar?
Just a couple of things. We'll have so our website right now that you should go to is contango.org, but I think by next week we'll have the new branded company website up and running, Contango Silver and Gold. And the address there is going to be very simple. It's just going to be Contango. So www.contango.com. And then, really the big news coming up here, we'll first have our, quarterly results coming up. I think the MRE at Kitsault is a big event because, there's been a lot of drilling done, and a lot of infill and upgrading of resources, from inferred and to measured indicated. So I think that's a big catalyst, and it will certainly guide our plans and our drill plans for the remainder of the year. And with the objective of early next year producing in a preliminary economic assessment that will basically describe how we plan to develop the Kitsault district, the whole string of pearls there. And then obviously there's a lot of work to do. And the way I describe the company right now, we've got the capital, we've got the team, we're generating cash flow from Manh Choh. It's all about execution. So it's about drilling holes, building roads, and putting mine plans together and a transportation plan and putting together a tolling arrangement. So there's a lot of work to do, but we've got the money to do it. We've got great assets, we've got great jurisdiction, and we've got the team to do it, to execute. So I'm excited. We're going to spend a lot of time on the road telling the story, and I'm working looking forward to working with Sean and getting this story out.
Well, I'm excited to follow it, and Sean, it was also I'll mention before we wrap up. I appreciated the letters that you sent out to the shareholders. Obviously, when you have companies merge, if everybody's trying to do the same thing, that doesn't always work as well. Yet it seems like you guys really have figured out a nice balance where you're able to focus on your strengths in a complementary way, which I think will be a really key thing going forward. So, gentlemen, I appreciate you stopping by and shedding some light on the silver market and also the deal. Congratulations on the merger, and we'll look forward to all the upcoming results going forward. So, thanks again for being here.
It was a pleasure, Chris. Thanks.
Thanks, Chris. Nice to see you.
Well, thank you as always for being here. Sure hope you enjoyed the show and found it helpful. And if you did, just wanted to let you know that you can receive these shows via email if you go to arcadiaeconomics.com and just put in your email and first name over there and hit sign me up. And then each day when our show is released, it will be delivered right to your inbox. And in case you missed it yesterday, we talked about how everybody's least favorite mega bank, Goldman Sachs, just doubled down on their $5,400 gold target. Some interesting comments in that one. Find out more about what they had to say. Well, that one's coming your way now.